But anyway, Arthi, welcome this morning. I know you look much better. You only had a half a Red Bull this morning.
Three quarters.
Oh, three quarters. That's a big change for us this morning. He won't come across as so shaky this morning in his conversation.
100%.
But we're also so privileged this morning, and a very personal one to us this morning, to have Louis Alberts here with us. Welcome to the Human Golf Show, Louis.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
And thank you for taking the time. I am excited about this one. I think there's a lot of people that follow you and relate to you. And you've had a great kickoff. I mean, people don't realize that you haven't been on the tour for that long. You've only been a professional golfer for a short time. Also, you had a very late start in your career. So over to you. Tell us a little bit about you, Louis, where it's all come from and where you are today.
Well, mainly my dad from a young age. But I was a normal kid, played all sports. Motorbikes, cricket, rugby, golf. Most of our holidays were probably on the golf course or San Amir mostly. But yeah, growing up until 18 years old, everything was pretty normal except golf just had that little bit of a standout. And then arrived in Pretoria, where I met my team. And to this date, they're still the same team, which is great. But yeah, lots of ups and downs through, what's it now, 7 or so years. Ups and downs, but I pretty much grew from year one to where I'm now. Even if it's a little climb, it was a climb every year, and yeah, very fortunate to be where I am, and thankful for everyone that's been on the road. And yeah, but yeah, from a small town in Dundee to where I'm now, yeah, it's great. I can't complain, and hopefully some big things to come.
So 7 years, but you've only been a pro since 2019 or 18?
2018. I think I was 21 years old.
Okay, you turned.
Yeah.
And then 7 years in total, you've been playing golf?
No, just after school, where it kind of became, you know, my main priority. That's pretty much what we did. At school, I played for the school and so forth, but I went to class. I didn't do homeschooling or anything, and I played rugby up until matric and stuff like that, yeah.
We know once the bug of golf catches you, it catches you, whether you're an amateur or pro. But what was that switch in your mind that it was golf?
I don't know. It's not really a switch. It's just like a love for the game, probably. Love for the game. I think my dad also kind of maybe loves it more than I did. And that just kind of grew and grew since a young age. It just stood out from the beginning. It's not really something you can, like, pushed on a person, or it just comes naturally.
It was probably a bonding thing with your dad.
Yeah, and my brother. My brother also played since young, and we loved it. And our holidays were, at a golf course playing, I don't know, junior golf or whatever. Yeah, and it was great. And my dad definitely, pushed it on us a bit when we were younger. But yeah, no regrets now.
Ignited the flame a little bit.
Mm.
And what was your talent as you started playing? What part of the game is really came natural to you?
Probably very, I was like a, didn't do anything like the right way. I swung it really weirdly at school, hit like these massive draws. I don't know, it's kind of just like learning how to play the game the way you wanted to, I guess, from a young age. Playing on, Dundee and those type of golf courses aren't the best, so you just have to kind of make it work. Didn't have proper coaching and stuff like that. So I think you learn a lot about the game if you move away from, doing things by the book, I guess. And now, the book and how you learn to play golf kind of combine, maybe quite a good thing.
And what's that skill, if I have to take a step back, what would you say do you rate the most? Your irons, your short game, putting, driver, what's your stability?
I would want to say my putting. And, I try to work on it to be my putting, because that is just the name of the game. That's how you make cuts, that's how you win, that's how you save a bad round. It just comes into play the majority of the time. And my coach is obviously very good at the putting part of the game. And I'm very thankful for that. And that has helped me over the last years, yeah.
And Thomas, so your support structure around you that you say has been there from day one. We were just speaking about management companies, and we'll get into that now. But what does that support structure look like? I also know that you recently, in May last year, got married to Claudia.
Engaged.
Engaged. My apologies. So you're not there at the married yet. You can see it in your face. What is that, and what has that changed? Has that changed anything for you?
I think so, definitely. I think being a little bit more grounded and your priorities lie in good areas And my coaching, you know, Emil Steinman, he's been there since I arrived in Pretoria, so that's about 7 or 8 years now. Theo Bazadino's been there for the whole period of time as well. Gavin Groves, you know, started the first 4 years or so, and then we reunited again. And then obviously my parents and my brother and family are so very supportive and love the game. And then obviously Claudia. When I met her, I actually met her the weekend of the World Cup final in Knysna. Actually, but her brother played the tournament as well. And we both
Jonathan.
And we both missed the cut. And then that's actually where I met her. So weird place to meet, you know, we're from different places and different circumstances, but everything happens for a reason. And yeah, she moved to Joburg about 4 months ago, and it's been great. She's very supportive. She's very understanding of the game through her brother, I guess, which is great because, you know, this game can get a bit tricky. You know, you're never at home. Even if you play badly, you know, even if I don't want to, I might be a bit grumpy. I'm very thankful for the people around me, and I'm pretty sure they'll stick around for a long time to come.
So the idea for us always is to make sure you get to know some of the personalities on the tour. We believe it brings the fans much closer towards the game, and we look at you differently when we do have 50 minutes with you on the show, and that's a big drive for us. But tell me, how do you feel about golf at the moment? The game, what it's growing, what do you think is helping, and what would you like to see more of?
I think the game is growing immensely. Even if you just look at the Sunshine Tour, we've got more tournaments, more prize money. You know, the players have been great. And the players playing abroad are coming back and playing these events, even if they had to start somewhere else. I don't know, maybe LIV did make a little bit of an impact on the bigger scheme of things with the PGA Tour. Everyone like got a bit of a wake-up call and maybe got a little bit too comfortable with they were kind of the best and no one's going to beat them. So, yeah, I think if everyone just keeps staying on their toes and focusing on the things that brought us here in the first place, I think everything should be fine. You know, it's not a one-man game. Everyone helps each other. If it's the community buying balls at the pro shop, or if it's a pro coming back to play Dimension Data, or, I don't know, giving out free tickets or whatever, everything works to the same goal. You know, everyone plays the same sport.
Do you think the Sunshine Tour is growing compared to when you started?
Yeah, for sure. I think the prize money for sure is bigger. Mm. And the tournaments, we got about 30 tournaments a season.
Mm.
That's a lot.
That's a hell of a lot.
That's a lot.
Thomas has done a really good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With all the new tournaments, the link to the Challenge Tour, new European Tour events, prize money is 100%. Just...
I think the top three non-exempt players get a DP card.
Yeah, they do.
Mm.
After every season. Like something like that, that's massive.
Yeah.
You see, that's the other part of it that we always forget about. And we always speak so well about the Sunshine Tour because I can't imagine being an easy management to do. You know, there's political stuff involved.
Please everyone as well.
You can't be everything to everyone, you know. So I think they always probably look back at some of the mistakes they made or things they could have done better. But I think some of the actions that they've taken has really led to an incredible foundation. And it's not just the prize money and the amount of tours that gets played, but also, like you say, the access to other parts of the world and other tours. They definitely have made big moves on that too.
Yeah. Mm. It's a feeder tour. It's a Sunshine Tour greatness starts here. It's not just to try, you know, sound clever or something. Yeah. It really does. Because the opportunities that they give us are there.
Yeah.
You know, through the challenge, European, or even finals day, if you come top, I don't know, 10 or so order of merit, you get finals day exemptions and you can, there's really enough opportunities to, if you make use of them. And enough good players, enough good tournaments. Challenge Tour, we got, 6 or 7 tournaments. The European Tour, we got 6 or 7. Look at Oki. Just won the right event, and he's a very changed man.
Yeah, he's top 10 on the DP rankings at the moment.
Yeah, fourth.
It's ridiculous.
That's just incredible.
That's amazing. And I think he's been plotting along for so many years, just how many seconds he's had, not winning a lot, and all of a sudden winning the right tournaments. I'm sure his self-belief is just through the roof now, and, you know, see you later.
But yeah, if you think about sport, where else can you make such a big jump in a different sport? Not really.
Yeah.
You know, golf is, keeps you on your toes permanently, even if it's, you know, your home club, you know, trying to break 80 or something. You're very keen to try the next weekend to break that 80. So it doesn't matter what level you're on, it tests you the same way.
So everybody's got a big dream, and then you take on whatever you take on, and then hopefully there comes validation with your decision. I think you've certainly had validation in the early start of your career. And especially if I say early start, I'm not referring to the 7 years. You've only been a pro since 2018, actually late 2018. But then you've had some great moments already that validates a decision that you've made. Just talk us through some of your most proud moments that you've had so far.
Because, yeah, my pro career definitely started quite slow. It was not easy. I needed some help, and I just try to see the light in the tunnel. So it was a bit slow. And then, but yeah, obviously, you know, getting the first win was just, yeah, those feelings from being a six-year-old to then just all gather in 30 seconds. It was, yeah, it was quite unreal.
And the win you're referring to is
Mount Edgecombe.
Mount Edgecombe win.
Yeah, and that final 9 holes, that's why you practice. That is, yeah, it's 100% why you practice to put yourself in a position. You know, even yesterday at Didata, I had maybe not a chance to win, but, you know, the feelings were there, you know, with a couple of holes to play. And it doesn't always go your way. You make some mistakes or whatever the case may be. But that's why you practice. And that, yeah, when it came together at Mount Edgecombe, it was so great. And all the struggles that you had before that kind of just in that day just go away.
If I had to ask you, you said in the beginning of your career, things were quite slow and, you know, didn't go your way. What do you think was the change from now to then? Was it mental? Was it ability? Was it comfort zone? Did you feel like you didn't belong or you needed to prove yourself? What do you think was the reason behind that?
It's a tough one because it's maybe a combination of a few things, but yeah, being new on a tour is never easy. The guys are flipping good, and maybe you didn't understand that so quite well because you just came off a period maybe of, you know, top 10 was quite a general thing on the amateur circuit, and then it's not the same thing on the tour because it is a bit of a difference. But I think time is a big one. Time, you know, getting to know yourself more than the tour, I think it plays a big part. Some people underestimate, you know, they try to emulate things that maybe Rory does well or something. But the fact is you need to be able to know yourself well. Otherwise, under pressure, you're going to struggle. But if you know yourself well enough, under pressure, you'll know, you know, what you need to do.
How to react and how to do it.
Yeah. Some tee shots under pressure, it's something you can't really teach. It's just something you have to learn over time. And I think that was probably one of the big differences is just time. Getting to myself, know myself, and then
bit of maturity,
yeah. I'm playing the game a little bit more like I should, or well, in my own manner, and not compared to other people.
Mm. And the mental part of the game, which we all understand, is obviously vitally important because a lot of people go with skill, you know, has the capacity and the skill. But if we look at you over the weekends and we see maybe you're a dip in the hole, or there's a strike that's not so consistent. What goes through your mind and what's your weaknesses when it comes to your mental part of your game?
It's a tough one because everyone's obviously differently, different mentally, or struggle with different things. But I would say my mentality around golf in general, and especially when it gets a bit uptight, is pretty good. But, you know, being nervous, and then maybe in the past, you know, something happened, or, you know, you had a bad experience with nerves or something like that, it does tend to creep in a bit, and then your body does have like this little numbness about it, and you can only test yourself once you're in that situation again. You can't just practice it, so that it gets tough. I know, like even yesterday coming down the stretch, that last hole with quite a bit of people and so forth, you can't teach that. It's just you have to put yourself in that situation and try to remember what you did wrong last time and try and make it better.
Did you go for it in two?
No, I didn't.
No, you left. Trees. Just left of the trees.
And then with a bad shot and unlucky together, yeah, I made 7, which was a bit unfortunate. I think I was lying fourth or fifth. So that, you know, so stuff like that hits hard. But if you can't handle disappointments, then you shouldn't be playing this game. Because that's what 80% of this game is disappointment.
And I think the thing is, what people sometimes don't do is learn from their mistakes. They more harp on, you know, I've made a mistake. What did I step back a bit? What did I do wrong?
Mm.
Try, evaluate it and assess it so that the next time you're in that position, you actually thrive or do better.
Of course. Because you kind of just, you know, think about the things you lost maybe or whatever the case may be. But yeah, if you don't learn from your mistakes, it's going to be a tough road.
And on tour, what is it like? So the weekend at Die Data, let's use as a reference. Friday and Saturday, you obviously have the Pro-Am, which is a commitment to all the big sponsors and people get to play with their favorite people. But tell us, when you finish a round, what happens after that? And if you don't mind, it's a double-ended one. Then also just a bit of what is your preparation like on a daily basis and your routine that you go through?
Well, in terms of tournaments, every tournament is a bit different. Die Data is definitely up there with one of the better, you know, catering ones. So we get we're very fortunate. You know, there's a big tent with displays of foods and drinks, and you know, it's on the 18th green at Montague. So after the round, you obviously just gonna not have alcohol, but you know, have something to drink, have something to eat, just take a breather and watch people come in. So it's great. And then, but yeah, normal tournaments pretty much the same thing. Just have something to eat. But in terms of my preparation, it takes about an hour, 20 minutes to warm up and probably an hour, 45 minutes to warm down. It's more the fact that, you know, if there was something wrong the day, maybe just show yourself that you can actually pull that shot off or hit that shape or whatever the case may be. And just body-wise, just trying to keep your body on a consistent level is about it. Just to, because you're playing 4 days a week, you're playing 30 weeks a year. It's not always about, you know, the next day. It's just about some consistency over a long period of time.
And is there a fun atmosphere, or does players really look at each other what is it like?
Well, certainly, we've got a travel group. We actually call ourselves the OGs on WhatsApp. But no, good. We some good mates, different levels, but we come together with a similar goal, and we try keep things as fun as we can. You know, if we stay together. We must say it's quite lucky in the evenings, you know. We just have a laugh and don't talk too much about golf. Yeah. And, you know, we're still professional about things, but no, it's lucky. If you stay one man band, it gets lonely out there. So you need to try and figure out some ways to just enjoy it. Maybe practice rounds is with your mates playing for $100 or, you know, whatever the case may be. So, yeah, it gets lonely and it gets long. And if you're away from home and stuff, also, you need to try and figure out some ways to enjoy it. And yeah, people around you, mates, you know, even if you're playing against them, I don't know, you still have, you know, you're still happy for them and just understand the goal, the sport you're playing.
And some of the people on the tour, anybody you look up to?
Yeah. We got so many good players out there playing on the European and PGA tours. It's so great. And it just gives you that little sense of, you know, if they could do it, you can do it.
You can do it.
You know, George Goodsea is one of my, you know, I really enjoy his game. I think he plays his own game so well. I think he understands what he does well, and he sticks to that. And his scheduling is different to others. And I just think he focuses on himself so well, and he's reaping the rewards.
Mm. Yeah, in a massive way at the moment. What do you think sets you apart? What sets you apart from some of the guys? Because your finishes, if you look at your stats, you can see you just on that edge the whole time. And it just feels like you're in that winning circle. You know, moments like yesterday, I saw that too. And it was like, you know, Louis, don't go left. But tell me a little bit about that. And what do you think sets you apart?
Before you answer that, do you think if you had a 45-inch driver, it would have gone straighter?
No.
No, I'm joking.
Probably skewer.
Probably been 20 more left. So Louis plays with a 43-inch driver, which is a 3-wood shaft in his driver, just for everyone to know. So
and my 4-wood is a 5-wood length. So yeah. My diamond 3-wood.
Sorry, I interrupted there a little bit.
No, just, not at all. Wear that
quick
in there.
To see, you know, what do you think?
And would that have made a difference? Because, I mean, your natural shape is a little bit of a jaw.
I tend to fade it.
Yeah.
But I mean, you've got the draw in you as well. Am I?
I do, because I guess my fade can get a bit big. So my, you know, my practice routines are drawy to kind of narrow it down.
Okay, so okay. So your dispersion. Phases where I hit
it straighter and so forth. But yeah, my driver is shorter. And I think Tristan Lawrence was the first person's driver I hit, which was a fully 43-inch driver. It was one shot, and then I was like, I need this like tomorrow. It's just so comfortable. The length, I don't know, just made sense, and you don't hit it much shorter.
And you playing with what at the moment? Obviously playing Titleist, but yeah. What are you playing?
TSR 2, 8-degree head with a hazardous smoke.
Hazardous Hulk.
Hulk green.
Mm.
Shafton, I think it's a
70TX.
70TX, and my forward is a 80TX, I think, or same shaft. 16.5-degree head, so yeah. And they've been, yeah, it's in my bag for quite a while.
And irons?
D100 irons with X100 shafts.
Butter?
It's a Scotty Cameron. It's a Circle T, which I'm very fortunate to have. And then, I don't know, the names are coming to me now. It's like a little half moon.
Okay.
Little half moon shape. No, it's been great. 2 years in the bag, and I actually won with that same putter. So if you've got a good memory of the putter, you just have to stick to it.
Yeah, because it's not something people often change, huh?
I feel like people that change putters often have got demons.
Okay.
Could be.
Personally, because you're searching for something, sometimes it's good to chop and change. But if you have a consistent pattern with your putting, I think you'll be a lot more consistent putter.
Mm.
That makes sense.
100%.
Can I assume Vokey wedges?
Yeah. Got a 46. 50.
46?
Pitching wedge.
It's okay.
As a Vokey. 46, 50, 54, and 58. And they've also been... My bag hasn't actually changed for a long time. I think it was just like the 4-3 wood area where I struggled a bit trying to get something good. I actually changed. Rudy brought me a driver, a forward on Tuesday. And I put it straight in the bag, and that's not like me. So at least I think this one is here to stay.
Why the forward?
Just distance control. Just, you know, trying to hit a certain distance. I think the 3-wood, especially I like it shorter, so you need some glue in the head, and then sometimes the ball just kind of falls out the air. And especially if you pull it, then it goes way too far. So it's just trying to build something that feels comfortable and that goes a certain distance without going off the planet.
And loft is your friend. Now add a bit of loft to the club, it's just going to be a lot easier to hit. I mean, it's just basic.
Mm.
You know, if you've got a 16.5-degree or an 11-degree, I know it's a big gap, but it's going to be a lot more easier to hit a 16.5-degree, especially under pressure. You know, yeah. You want a club that under pressure, you don't even have to second guess it. You can pull it and, you can just hit it. Yeah. And I see a lot of the guys on tour now, even on the European tour, they're going driver 3-wood, 5-wood, 7-wood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go back 10 years, you would get tuned that you're a flipping senior golfer if you had a 7-wood in your bag. But the game is evolving. You know, it's not about what's in your bag. And look, people want to make money. They want to be consistent. They want to hit the shots under pressure. Make it a bit easier. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll quote John Rahm when he just recently said that, you know, all I keep asking is easier to hit and forgiveness. Easier to hit the forgiveness. He'll work out the rest.
Mm.
You know, just keep developing towards that particular goal for him personally now. But then navigating the world of golf, you know, there's so many behind the scenes things that we always know. And hopefully somebody that's listening to this. One, how do you navigate sponsorships?
It's immensely difficult, to be quite honest. You can go out and ask, but it's really difficult. It's, you know, probably the easiest way is about, you know, building relationships rather than, you know, just asking for a sponsorship. And obviously your results speak a big deal. But yeah, I've been fortunate to have, you know, good people in my corner that's helped me in different ways. And yeah, but no, I must say on the Sunshine Tour, sponsorships is quite a big thing because, you know, the ratio between, you know, earnings and expenditure and stuff like that, especially if you're a bit older and you have a wife or a kid or something like that, it gets pretty intense. So if you got some people putting, leaving some strain off your shoulders just to play the game, it does make a massive impact. I think sponsorships is a big topic in South Africa, and I think the guys that do have some sponsorships, you can definitely see a bit of a difference in freedom. And if every putt you hit or every shot you hit, if you start thinking, what's next week looking like, what's the prize money looking like, what's my flight's going to cost and stuff like that, then it's like very close to impossible to play the game. So sponsorships, no, it is a big deal.
And it's always a combination of, yes, equipment, yes, shoes, yes, clothing, but then the hotels don't accept your signed shirt as payment. And the airlines, when you call them, say, listen, I'll bring a Titleist V1X through and sign it for you guys, they don't really accept that as payment. Mm. So it's always that struggle between cash and equipment, and you need both in order to make it.
Yeah, you do. Everyone says it's a very lonely sport and one man, because it's only you hitting the ball, but there's lots of factors that help you hitting that ball. And, sponsors is definitely one of them. Your team is another. And unfortunately, it's an expensive sport, even from a young age. Some people didn't have as much chance as others because it's just too expensive. And I'm very fortunate that my parents were able to give me a good chance at this game. And now, getting older, it's hard. And then sometimes in South Africa, it's also hard because, you try and explain to someone what your money's worth, whatever they give you and what you can give them. But with the Sunshine Tour bringing on Super Sport and, things like this, podcasts and, social media and Super Sport, if you play well and you have some TV time, all those things are very valuable as a player. And I feel like things click at the right time. When you need it the most, probably not going to happen. And when you don't really need it, then it feels like things come in easier. But just how the game works.
What is it roughly? I don't want to put you on the spot here, but what is the rough cost to be on the tour a year?
Mainly just golf, about $400,000 a year.
That accommodation with flights and everything?
Yeah,
probably. And it's not like you book into a 5-star resort wherever you go. No, you know what I mean?
That's everyone's working on budgets here.
Yeah.
You try to stay, without staying on the floor, but without staying in a 5-star hotel, somewhere in the middle there.
Yeah.
And, sometimes you have to hire a car sometimes. And even with that expenditure, you still try and, someone here that you can stay with. And, this guy, Kelston Motor Group gives me a car when I go to PE, for example, like stuff like that helps, but the expenditure is still probably around 400 a year. So it is expensive. And if you make 400 or 500 in the year, you're close to getting top 50 order of merit. So
the tax man still wants. Well. Yeah.
So you're playing well. So the ratio is a bit tough sometimes without any help.
Now, Louis, just talk to us a little bit, because there's a lot of youngsters. If you start a new business, or Arthur, a guy goes into the fitting world, I would assume that there's a few things that you think you need to do and know. But then when you start to work, you realize that there's different ways. So management companies, just talk me through that at the moment. We just had a conversation off air before the time, but tell me just some of the things you've learned and where you are currently with that.
Yeah, I think management companies is a difficult one. Because in certain areas they can obviously help you, and in certain areas maybe just cost you some money. I've spoken to some of the more senior players and so forth. I think you must, if a manager kind of asks you or there is conversation about something, then just maybe take a couple of days and think about it, because there are contracts in place, and it can get more
complicated.
It can get more complicated than what you think in the beginning. And, selling dreams to actually receiving stuff is also a bit of a difference. And management companies, in my opinion, their two main priorities is sponsorships and invites. So I would definitely recommend, if someone does, call you up, I think the main topics to speak about are definitely those two. And then if you do get invites or sponsorships, then great. Then I think it's worth it. And if it's not, then yeah, maybe try, you know, path your, you know, pave your own way until you get the right person.
And a good management company is, like you say, to have, you know, because invitation creates opportunity. Then it comes down to the hard work and what you put in order to mine that opportunity. As an example, on average, management companies, what do they take from players? What is the cost to deal with them?
It's really, it obviously differs. You know, some people do it differently. They maybe only charge you on things that they do, or they just charge you in general, you know, 3 or 5% per week, per tournament. Maybe just the admin fee. And then on top of maybe if they get you an invite, you pay more in that specific event. So it differs, but yeah, it's definitely not for free. And yeah, it's something that rather chat about it and make sure you're making the right decisions, because golf is hard as it is. You want the right people in your corner, obviously.
I think a lot of people also, when they get management groups or companies, when they get approached, you know, you almost feel like, yes, you know, now I'm in the right place. Yes, they're asking me now. I'm moving in the right direction. But they don't read the contract or the fine print. So you see sort of like, this is going to help me, but at what cost? You know, from a financial cost, etc. Because like Louis was saying, cost you 400,000 rand a year on the Sunshine Tour and you make 500,000, you know, you what, top 50, top 40 on the order of merit?
Yeah, 500,000 is going to get you probably top 50, and that's okay. You played really well.
You've had a good season. Okay, then you get into the next, you get into co-sanctions on top 50, I think. But you still got to pay the tax, man. You've got 100 grand balance.
Yeah.
You know, take 5% of 400 grand.
Yeah.
Plus the tax, man.
Yeah.
So you just need to really, really do the maths and really dive into it. And I think also, I feel with relationships as in general, you know, from business and friends, you know, start small, you know, negotiate something small and say, right, this is what we can do together, but let's start small and let's build a career path together. You know, can't charge I'll just use a Jacqueline Hess, what you're going to charge a Sean Norris.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? No, if you want to get that person to Sean Norris's space, build a path together, you know?
No, it's a
give and take thing type of a thing. It's a long-term envision. You know, business is long-term, not short-term.
100%.
So that's just my two cents,
I think. And relationships are important.
Correct.
But with people that have the same goal.
Correct. And the same value system as well. Yeah, otherwise, there's a clash.
Like a little family.
Yeah.
Family is a good word. You know, if you have family around you, it goes a long way.
Yeah. And what I also found in golf is you have to achieve some incredible stuff. But look at some of the biggest golf personalities. They're not the top 10 players currently. But they've won Masters. They've won an Open. They've won incredible tournaments that give you access for the rest of your life. You know, there's a saying, if you win a master or an open championship, you'll never worry again in your life for anything. And if you look at that, look at Trevor Immelman as an example. He just won that position at CBS Sports as one of the anchor. I mean, he's now one of the top two personalities within golf, commentating, call it behind the scenes, whatever you want to. But that comes a little bit also out of the Masters that he won. You know, the seat that you get.
I would go a step back. I don't think he would have even been in the first seat. Let's call that the second seat.
Correct.
If you didn't win the Masters.
Yes.
Well, you can beg to differ. I mean, he's a great guy, great personality, very intelligent, knows the game very well.
Yeah, he does.
He's got a good head on his shoulders. So, but that opportunity probably arose because of his CV and his link to America winning the Masters.
100%.
You know, that moment was so South African for me when...
I'll never forget where I was.
Yeah.
It felt like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I will not remember where I was at that time.
Listen, if you look at Trevor now, when you look at the old flashback towards that, it definitely was a different time. But what I found was so amazing at the president, he's obviously the captain of the president or the international team, where he fixed the divots from the guy standing on the green afterwards. It was such a special moment in golf.
Did you see that?
I don't know if you saw that.
So I don't know if it was after the round completely or after the one group passed, because don't don't quote me on this because I don't know what the ruling is. Someone else fixing the marks in play. You get what I'm saying?
Mm.
But it was when the group left the green, Trevor took his pitchfork and fixed some divots on the green, pitch marks on the green. And he's the captain.
Yeah. And the main cameras we switched off, that was behind the scenes camera that caught him doing it.
Correct.
So it was certainly not. He's not doing it for any other reason but respect.
Yeah.
It's definitely respecting. I don't want to talk too much out of it, but I had an opportunity to sit with Johan and June Immelman for dinner while we watched. Literally, that night is when Trevor did his first intro on CBS. And yeah, I said, you know, with the dad. And I mean, you can just imagine the emotion that came out of both of them. But that's something that Johan stood out for him with his son, where he was so proud.
Yeah.
You know, and make no mistake, Mark is also making some great impact in golf that side as well. So that's what I always found in golf. You know, yes, it's a hard game. But once you win some of the big ones or get to that level, you know, golf looks after you also for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not talking from an experience perspective whatsoever, but certainly just from an amateur standing aside.
You've paid your dues.
Yeah, you know? I feel that's...
You've come a long way to get to where you were. I promise you it wasn't by default or by fluke or because someone else gave it away, you know, or gave it to you. Like, yes. Sign this contract, you'll win the Masters. Yeah. It's never going to happen. So,
and I think you met some great people along the way. So if something does happen to you in like a bad way, your circle is big enough by the time you get there.
And I mean, look at Dylan. I mean, he was chatting when we were chatting to him on the podcast, and after you won the Johnny Walker, what's the Johnny Walker?
John Deere Classic.
We spoke about his increase in ball speed and clubhead speed. So why did you do that? Well, I just won a PGA Tour event. I've got a 2-year exemption. I've got time to work.
Oh, yeah.
Makes sense. And gain speed and give myself the opportunity to get closer to the hole so that I can score better and do some speed work. So it all, you know, once you've got given that opportunity and paid your dues and won the right tournament, it gives you the opportunity to try break through to that next level. Even if it takes you a year and a half in your 2-year exemption, stick to the process and the plan and get to where you need to do for another 15 years later.
Yeah. So, those are also things that you can make to differ because you just won the John Deere. So if you can win the John Deere, I'm pretty sure you can win a different tournament for the same game.
Correct.
So some people think, maybe it's time, you know, you can use those 2 years to maybe, you know, better yourself, which is great. And I think, but on the other hand, you also had a great game to win the John Deere. So I think that's why this game is so beautiful in a sense, because everyone is so different. Some people take it like very specifically, you know, with the technology of today and stuff like that. And some people just naturally play the game, like I would say Louis.
And Sean Norris.
Louis and Sean and George. And those guys are good examples that if they win a tournament, they aren't going to...
They're still going to have their Brunnervein.
And George might just do a... snooker tournament at the same time.
Yeah, I've played with him a couple of times where we talk about those.
He's very good, yeah.
He's part of like the PCC committee or club or something, and he plays like matches against other people. Yeah,
well, it just shows you because he's a really, really good putter. So he knows how to get the ball in the hole.
I tell you, I don't want to talk out of it, but I had to meet him very early at Pretoria Country Club the one morning, and I could see he came out of a rough night. And then after that, he was just like, Albert, I need to go. The tournament's about to start. So I'm like, what tournament are you talking about? I go, no, snooker. The snooker tournament. on a Saturday. Apparently, it's cooking there on a Saturday morning. I would have expected him to get onto the golf course, but it was the snooker tournament that he was more interested on the day.
That's interesting.
Now, Louis, are you allowed to be yourself on tour? And are you yourself? You know, or do you have to put up a lot of smiles and waving? And what is the environment that they create there?
Obviously, it depends what personality you are.
Yeah.
I guess if you have a bit of a wild personality, it might catch up to you a little bit. But in terms of, no, I think it's actually quite comfortable, quite easy. You know, I'm not a very loud or... a very out-the-box person anyway. So, I get to enjoy myself fully, I guess. You have to respect the game. You have to respect the Sunshine Tour. You know, you are representing a brand.
Yeah.
So, I guess, especially off the golf course, probably mainly to, you know, I guess you can't do some stupid shit.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's just facts. But that, I guess that's just being respectful to people around you anyway.
Yeah.
So no, in terms of, you know, some freedom of being yourself, no, 100%. Like one of my best mates, Henny, I think he's himself fully, the way he dresses, the way he is around other people. He's a great example on, you know, how to be yourself. And yeah, I think it's everyone for themselves and how they want to be, I guess.
I think for me personally, I'll always judge a character, if I had to judge a character, based on a period. Okay, so like, for example, with Louis and Henny Duplessis, for example, we've gone back many years together playing golf. And obviously when I'm at events, you know, helping them out, whether they need my service or not, if they come up to me and say, hello, Arthur, how are you doing? Not wanting anything, because we've had a relationship or we know of each other, or we've, you know, associated together. Just that coming up to me and say, Arthur, how are you doing? Just shows a lot about someone, even though you're playing on the LIV Tour, European Tour, PGA Tour. And then you get the other probably 1% of the people that won't do that and just do their own thing and, you know, ax die main man no type of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's the small basic things that is there, and it's just saying, hello, how are you doing? Lucky to see you. Yeah, how's things going? You know, that for me takes over everything.
Mm.
But you have to also be, you know, amateurs, you know, in general. Think about this, whether you're watching a movie, whether you're watching some documentary, attention, to keep your attention is important. You know, you can't just say, I'm putting on a good show, therefore you have to watch it. It has to be exciting. And just like in anything, all these different personalities creates moments that amateurs like and enjoy watching.
Mm.
Because we have to get the viewership, you know, up. I'm not talking from where the stats are or know what the stats are, but ultimately we always want the most viewers we possibly have, because that has a direct effect on sponsorships and how players are highlighted and etc. You know, we as amateurs, if it's just going to be the serious game where everybody's serious, nobody really, if it's just this one type of personality that everybody gets conformed on, I think the game will go backwards.
Mm.
You know, you want these different personalities within golf to shine and have its moments. And I even see some of the serious guys, when they have that putt in the right moment, you know, they get excited, you know.
Yeah.
And to us, that creates excitement because we share that joy with them. We really do. You know, that's the moment where we share that same joy. You know, I saw Cameron Smith towards the end of last year when he – just look at that emotions for the last three holes, you know, and then at the end he pulled it through at the end. But look at that. You know, to us, that looks so genuine. And that win, you could see that that's something he was chasing for quite some time. Mm. And that breakthrough you need in order to continue. Because just like anything, you eventually will get judged to say, okay, well, it's been 12 years or whatever that is. I'm not saying that was Comrex's stats. Okay, well, are you going to win something? Are you going to at least top 10, 5 finish? Whatever it might be.
Very tough, because golf can change in a week. We all know that.
Yeah.
After a certain period of time, it's hard to differentiate where, you know, are you still believing it could happen next week, or are you just holding on to something that might not happen? It's very tough to, you know, if you start maybe staggering a little bit, and, you know, it's hard. It's hard to, you know, when, because you have to back yourself. No one else. It's not a team sport. So, you know, it's hard. And, there are a couple of players that fall in the same boat. Some people, you know, just stop and go and work, blindly. And then some people just, you know, carry on. And it could work out at the end. You know, it takes some time, and then all of a sudden you win something big, and then you just, you're on a different planet. You're on the first flight to Europe.
Yeah, you know, and that's why it's important that professionals, you know, and I'm not saying, because their game is to play the best they can, put all the love and effort in, because all we see is the beautiful stuff, really, you know, not always behind the scenes. But in order to grow the game, there's always a life after the game, you know, whether it be your coach that goes into coaching, sports management, whether it's academies that places you around the world to help out with golf management and facilities and et cetera. If we don't grow the game of golf, you know, there won't be a future for professionals to also go into other parts of the game. because it's the one thing that I think a lot of people are jealous from a sports perspective. It's the one sport that you can make money and continue being great at until you're very old.
Lots of people do it.
Lots of people do it. In any other game, I mean, you'll just irrelevant, you know, say, let's say after your 30s.
Yeah.
Most games, you know, sure. You have freaks in soccer, like 41-year-old, what's that freak's name?
Ronaldo.
No, he's not even there yet. That guy that with the long hair, man, is Zlatan.
Zlatan 41.
41. 41, buddy.
He's a beast.
I mean, that's the guy that comes into Los Angeles and then takes out an ad. Zlatan, you're welcome. That's the ad he takes out in the main newspaper to announce himself. Yeah, to announce himself to the world.
And then
Ronaldo's jersey.
Sorry, I've got to say this.
Yeah.
So Zlatan was at Man United, and then he was part of the English Premier League. And then one of the interview guys was saying, so who do you think is the best strikers in the Premier League? And the guy was like, Lukaku, and, you know, I can't remember the other guys. Probably, help me out here, Aguero. And then the guy in the interview said, so why don't you put your name, you know, on that list? He says, I don't compare myself to humans. I'm a lion. Lions don't compare themselves to humans.
Forgive us, you know, he's a sports show. Let's know one more thing about what he did. So Michael Jordan sends him a signed jersey, to him. Well, he signs it and sends it back to him. That's this guy's attitude. And make no mistake, he backs this up. So that's why he's such a legend in that field.
No, he's amazing.
But Michael Jordan sends you a jersey. You go, I didn't know you wanted a jersey from me. You sign it and send it back to him and say you're welcome.
No, that acts a legend.
Louis, sorry for Davis.
The personalities are great. That's what personalities.
For
you
know, sure.
You'll be able to, it excites you.
Yeah.
To watch the sport then.
Yeah. And I tell you what, Ney, and that's why there's something. And I think the Sunshine Tour, not as a tour, but as the players, they need to learn this still, in my opinion. Because, you know, you can say about a lot of these big personalities, but they have understood somebody like Bryson DeChambeau that started his YouTube channel, you know, that opened up his world to all of us. Make no mistake that created fans to him in a very different personality. And if you look at Dylan also, Dylan Fratelli invites a lot behind the scenes. You know, he's gym at his house. And his personality comes through in almost every post that he puts in. Mm. And he doesn't want to be controversial just so that he's controversial sake. He's just the type of guy that says, I know who I am. Why must I think exactly what I'm going to – I'm just going to say and be who I am. And you like that or you don't like
very
that.
Very raw.
You know, he's very raw.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you finish on 14th position, you know, that just validates, like, he's not just a guy that talks. He's also a guy that does.
And that Duos who said, Dylan, please make a cut.
I mean, I just want to, but please, you must do me a favor. You must take his position ending and post it. But we left.
Please pull his position.
Onto the clip.
And then just add Dylan's 14th.
Yeah, and I mean, we didn't want to be just difficult for difficult sake, but a guy comments like, oh, a guy that says this doesn't make the cuts. You know, and we said back to him, like, show us your purse, you know. Show us the achievements you have. Because we all know he's some dodgy sitting.
He had 37 followers or something ridiculous as well.
What?
That guy probably, I think he had like 37 to like,
And then he deleted his own comment. When we had people delete their comments, because the people just all of a sudden go, excuse me, who are you? Because there's a time for these people online. And it's good that we highlight some of that stuff. These days are over. You know what I mean? Shut the fuck up, in my opinion. Mm. Do it or shut the fuck up.
No, I agree.
You know what I mean? You have to sit here and be critical and look at this, Sancho. And hey, you amateurs, we get, you know, and I think South Africans think about this. The rugby and cricket when we grew up, our parents. I mean, there's fist fights that break out in South Africa because every parent thinks his son is the best shit and he's the best, he knows the most. And I'm just saying, listen, if you want to be critical of Louis, go and play that game. Go literally, if you stand next to him and a guy that is on your level, Louis, he would be privately speaking to you and say, Louis, I think you could have done better there. Or let me just, that's a private conversation. Now you get these people that come in from the side. Oh, Louis, I would have never hit that thing there. Well, I mean, just shut the fuck up, in my
opinion.
That's hard.
Just sit there and type a message. It's very easy.
Very easy.
Listen, there was one guy that wrote something and then deleted his post, and he went absolutely like
off.
We read this, and I was like, how do you have the audacity to say something to someone?
A comment.
It was a comment on a post. And then he actually...
On the human golf show post?
On Instagram.
To me, and you know, forget that guy because, I mean, who cares about him? But to me, you know, because you hear these things at the tour or you hear these things when, you know, because I go to a lot of them behind the scenes. I just want to say to people, I mean, do your thing. Support these guys. It's already challenging to do what they do. Support them. Get to know them a little bit. And, you know, we always say conscious viewing. And that's really, hopefully, Louis, that today will help, you know, us to highlight who you are.
Of course.
There you sit, really confident in who you are, a great personality. And I just want to also say, just an absolutely great heart. Mm. You've always just shown respect to me. Mm. I was absolutely no one in golf. And you know, Arthur comes out of the industry and I'm still absolutely no one in golf. But you showed me love and respect from day one that I met you. And I will never forget. And I always speak about that. Like, who do you think you are to treat anybody differently if this guy can treat somebody with love and respect? The European Tour is where you want to go to. And I always say, we don't say you're on the Sunshine Tour, it's a time and a place, but you've got a goal to be on the European Tour. Are you still in that same mindset?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I think there's, with the opportunities Sunshine Tour gives us, different routes you can take. But 100%, I think, you know, Sunshine Tour is a good feeder tour for European, and European is a good feeder tour for PGA, and a PGA is a good feeder tour to play the majors, and then the majors is a good feeder tour to become potentially world number one.
I almost thought you were going to go the US PGA tour as a good feeder for the Live. I thought he was going in that direction.
He knows more about golf than that. But I never looked at it that way. So that's sort of how the golfers also see it, Ney, how each tour feeds each other. So then from the PGA, it's opens and majors.
Yeah, but Sean potentially... Norris and those guys, they went to Asia, Japan. I think Sean Norris, you know, I think he got top 50, mainly just in Japan and Asia. So
and top 50 gets you onto the PGA Tour in a certain category.
Okay.
And so you'll be able to then play, and majors, obviously, crucially. Yeah. So you'll play your majors, you'll probably get some starts, some invites on PGA events with not having a card. And they'll give you a certain amount of events to try, because now you're the top 50 in the world.
Yeah.
Mm. One of the best players in the world. Mm. Why not play on our tour?
Yeah.
So they give you that opportunity to get a couple of invites, play a couple of tournaments. Cool. And then if you make enough money to be top, I think it's 120 something on the order of merit, then you keep your card and then you don't have to go through Korn Ferry Tour now.
Yes. Yeah. Short vision for you for this year. Just give us a bit of insight. What is your vision board for this year on the tour?
Well, the position I'm in right now is I'm 14th on the order of merit,
which is a great climb.
And then I think there's 10 events left. So home stretch with some big events and a little bit of a precious situation. And that's again why you practice. But yeah, I think there are two co-sanctioned tournaments left with DP, and then a couple with a challenge, and then a couple normal ones. Obviously, we know what, you know, if you come top 10 order of merit after the season, what doors can open.
So, what doors open up? Because I don't think the people who watch the show would know. What doors open up?
Different sometimes, but now I think top 3 non-exempt players get DP status. Might not be the best category, but they get status. And then the next 3 non-exempt get final stage exemption to all Q schools. And then there's also second stage exemption for the next 3. And then that's obviously your stepping stone. So if you come top 10, you've obviously made some good money. You can probably support yourself to go to that final stage. And, you know, skipping 2 stages is already a big hurdle.
Mm.
And then, if you don't, or you can get your card, obviously. If you don't always get your card, you can maybe keep your challenge to a card. And then go play Challenge Tour for a season. So there are a lot of options, but it starts on the Sunshine Tour where I'm now, and I've already had a good season, and I'm obviously just, my main focus is try to finish off as best I can so that I have those opportunities to go. I did go to Asian Tour, but that was from Stage 1 and got through Stage 1 and played Stage 2 and missed out on the final cut. Big learning curve. Although I wasn't overseas before that. And again, South African golf is up to standard. The depth could maybe be a little bit better overseas, but no, I think we've got something good going here. just trying to open up some doors to at least give you the opportunity to play.
Both tours you just mentioned, yeah, we're 10% roughly of the 10% of the field.
Mm.
But we always forget out of 127,000 golfers, if you add ladies golfers, I think it takes us up to...
I think we're on like 240 to 280 registered.
I thought that.
It has to be.
So it's 129,118 golfers, 1,000 golfers. That's registered
on the handicap system.
Yeah, and I mean the handicap and the club. So they've got club affiliation.
Mm.
So I'm sure there's still programs that have, like, you maybe not with a club, you know, and I think you're 100% right. I think that's another 100,000 roughly.
And then all the players that aren't handicapped like us.
Correct. But these are actually the viewers that you really have. Because if you think about this, if you fall into a different category, you might not be so passionate to watch the Sunshine Tour for 4 days in the week, you know, when the guys are actually playing. So I think this is your audience. And if you look at that in relation to other countries and then your position where we sit, we are phenomenal in our statistics at what we do. So it's definitely encouraging for a lot of golfers that it most certainly is possible, even out of a small pool. Because like somebody said the other, it's the value of players that we have that are really exceptional.
Yeah, and these platforms, you know, get to know people a bit better.
Yeah.
Gives you more, I don't know, perspective.
Yeah.
That it's only just a game. Everyone's normal out here.
Everyone is normal out there, yeah.
It's just humans.
So I'll finish up with this, if you don't mind, Louis. The best advice you've ever had?
I think get a good set of value systems and live by that. I think that will take care of most of... I think that will take care of most of your life. If you just have a good value system and follow that. Follow that. Help you make decisions. Help you how you interact with other people, how you interact with sponsors, how you interact with family, how you present yourself on a golf course. If you do make a lot of money or the other way around, it will still carry you through those good and bad times. I think that's probably about the main one I can think, yeah.
Arthi, anything from your side?
No, I think from my side, Louis, thanks for being here.
I like the fact that we're all wearing Titleist caps.
Mm. Yeah, I tell you what, it is certainly strategic.
That's my longest sponsor I've had.
Yeah, and we did it out of love this morning as well. We also have, obviously, we've had two people from Titleist or Kushnet come onto the show. So we have a very strong relationship with them here. Nothing official yet. But we wanted to wear the caps. One, it's a very brand. It's all, I think, all close to our hearts. It's always been an aspirational brand for most people growing up
and
in golf.
And they are really amazing in South Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, for a small community, they make a lot of effort.
Yeah.
I'm speaking from a professional point of view, which they are amazing. And then,
I mean, they support the tour players.
Like, so badly.
Hands down.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would really like to see other brands. I know there are some other brands in the background sponsoring a couple, a handful, you know, of players.
Of course. Yeah, they're hands-on. Leonard, you know, Leonard's been with a company for a long time and he's obviously very high up. And even then, he doesn't get someone else. He's still there, hands-on, you know, interacts with the people, make sure you're fine. I don't know, yeah, we're very, very fortunate, especially me. Be with them, and yeah, can't thank them enough. Actually,
you know, they do a good job for the pros and for the tour, and they give back like tenfold.
Incredible,
yeah.
And look at their presence also in the country. You know, they don't work out of some small little office somewhere. I mean, their commitment to the South African golf market, which we know is by certainly no default, could be a massive market for them. There's obviously big markets across the world for them. So for them to invest so much into South Africa, we really all appreciate that heavily.
Yeah.
And just on Leonard, I was on a flight back from Bloemfontein once with him, and it's been, you know, it takes a lot of energy to go through those 4 or 5 days, you know, on the tour. So he was flying back, and I just looked, and he started speaking, you know, about the players and the support. And at some stage, I looked at him, I was like, Leonard, I can't physically gain the energy to talk any longer about the game of golf tonight on this plane. But you, for the next half an hour, he was just, and I was just like, that's incredible. It almost attracts you, you know, like you just want to get more involved and see where you can assist.
It's the love of a game through a different perspective.
Completely.
Job title. Or
whatever. And he also started on tour.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He's actually, yeah. Even now, he's still pretty decent.
Mm.
James.
He's pretty good. And he was on tour for quite a few years.
Yeah. So, Leonard, thank you for everything that you do.
And
you
know, Rudy.
And Rudy,
no, of course,
you know, and the support team, it's not just, and it's a different driving range. They don't always just put their names to the best and, you know, everybody that's in fame or anybody that gets TV time. Their behind the scenes development that they don't always get credit for is also just incredible.
No, for sure.
So thank you very much, Louis, for today. We appreciate it so much. I really enjoyed this one. I think there was some information that came out of you today, which we've never talked about. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting.
But I'm thankful for the opportunity to broaden my horizon a little bit.
Yeah, I think we extracted.
We're preparing you for one of those big speeches you're going to have to make.
Correct.
Well, the first one's coming at my wedding.
Well, there we go.
You know, if it goes well, you better say it because it started, yeah.
If I can do that, I probably can do anything.
Just advice from me. Just don't drink too much before your speech. Because if you have something in front of you and you can't really focus on what you're reading, it's going to get tough. Rather, you can have a beer or two. I'm sure you can handle your booze, but do not hit the Brana vein before your speech, please. I've seen it many a times where the best man has a speech and then he just loses the plot.
Shame. I think my brother's stressing more than I am for his speech.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. He's been talking about it since probably the day we got engaged. Then he knows it's coming.
I'll also tell you, this is a bit off topic now, I know we have, but yes, I was nervous as hell for my speech. But like my leg was going like this the whole time and Raylan was like, just stop moving. I'm like, I can't help it. I didn't even want to eat before my speech. But it was, listen, can I tell you something? Once you're up there, you savor that moment.
Yeah. Everybody loves you there anyway.
No one cares if you're good or bad.
Exactly. You know, like everyone's there for you.
Yeah. So, and
I've spoken once or twice, but it's hard. It's not easy. Like you have to control your breathing. Otherwise, like you run out of breath.
Remember
and then you're like
breathe.
Trying to look down at your speech and then you're like everyone's staring at you. I think it like gets a bit overwhelming sometimes.
I think like you say, the speeches is a little bit late in the evening. So there's a one or dope that gives you a little bit of courage. For me, it was the moment I saw my wife.
I cried like a baby.
That, you know, I thought to myself, I'll be a smooth cat on this one. Eh? But like, I remember my mate said, she's here. And I turned, and that was it.
I
mean, the photos that came out of that was the ugliest photos. I was like, why would you snap me on a moment like that? But that's, you know, I think all men crumble a bit when she comes around the corner. Because
I think that's one. And then the second one's when that first child's born.
I can tell you now.
Those two points in your life, I think, are just in God's hands. Those
for sure, Lily. For sure. And, you know, it's amazing. I see almost all the Instagram, so many people on tour. And not that, you know, for us is any, but a lot of faith. People have a lot of faith on this tour. A lot of people...
I think it's great. I think
pray about their game.
Your value systems and your and your faith for sure gets you through some dark times. I think lots of players, you know, struggle with some of the basics and then tend to stop golf because it gets tough. As I said, I think if your value systems, your belief and your circle, you know, can take you pretty much anywhere you want to go.
For sure. Well, we wish you all the best, Louis.
Yeah, thanks.
You've definitely got fans here sitting in front of you, and I've got no doubt that the consumers or the amateurs and the professionals and the people within the golf industry, which we are very fortunate to have following us, is really going to enjoy this. We wish you all the best for this year, and we'll keep a close eye on you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Arthur.
Pleasure. Thanks, sir, Louis. Thanks, sir, Arthur.
Thanks,
Arthur. Appreciate your time.
On the next episode of the Human Golf Show.
I'm on the players' committee. I don't know if you guys know that.
We know, so yes.
It's been really, really enjoyable being a part of that. Now, I get to see a little bit more than just the average player, what the ins and outs are, what the tournament schedule is going to look like going forward. And, you know, Thomas and Selwyn and everyone involved with the Sunshine Tour, they do a great job.